You're listening to Working, the show about what people do all day. I'm your host, Jordan Weissman, and I'd like to welcome you back to our series about the world of medieval times, the national dinner theater chain, where you can go and watch knights joust and duel, and you can eat chicken with your hands and drink beer, and if you're a kid, you can wave around a sword in the air and scream at the action. When my producer, Jessamyn, and I went to catch the show a few weeks ago, we were frankly surprised. We were taken aback because we were expecting a lot of dueling and jousting and horse riding, which we got. We got plenty of that. But a lot of the show focuses on the horses. It focuses specifically on dressage, on horse dancing, horses doing tricks for the crowd. And we frankly were not expecting that, but it was delightful. And so I thought, I absolutely need to talk to the woman who trains these horses. And so you're going to meet Amanda Kenny. She is the head horse trainer at Medieval Times in Lyndhurst, New Jersey. She's been riding and working with horses for her entire life, from the time she was a child to today. And rather than droning on and on, I'm just going to let you enjoy. It's a fun chat. What's your name and what do you do?
So my name is Amanda Kenny, and I am the head horse trainer here at Medieval Times, New Jersey.
When I went to the show, I was deeply surprised by how much horse there was in it. Like one half of the show was like dressage.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
There's a lot of horse dancing.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe the role of the horses at Medieval Times?
I always say the role of the horses are, they're our number one. There's no horses, no show.
Yeah.
So obviously the knights play a big part too, but we need the horses to do the show.
So it seems like they're two things that they kind of were doing, and let me see if I get this right. There's just the basic, they're the steeds. The
right.
Knights ride them.
Uh-huh. That's funny you say two parts too. So when I try to explain to somebody like what I do and what the knights do, I always try to divide it in two. So there's the combat part, what the knights do. So the knights are fighting. And then there's the entertainment part, which is the dancing.
Yeah, the horse dancing.
Right.
Yeah. And this is the thing that is really surprising to me. They come out and like the horse is like, it's like kicking its legs back and stuff. So like, is that, and that's the majority of your job, teaching them how to do all of that.
Yes.
So is that like, that's your week is working on those moves?
Yes. So my title is horse trainer, but my number one job for Medieval Times is to care for the horses.
Okay.
So make sure they're healthy, they're happy, they're taken care of. I always say that's my number one, even though, you know, I'm the horse trainer. Yes, I do train every single day, but my number one job would be caring for the horses.
You're tending to them and you're teaching them.
Exactly.
Okay. So tell me about your background. Where do you come from?
Okay. So I'm originally from Chicago, born and raised in Chicago. My grandmother bred Frisian horses. She taught me everything I know since I was born. I was riding horses before I could walk. So I learned everything from her. I was at, you know, I lived in a small neighborhood, but my grandmother had a farm, a huge Frisian farm.
Cool. What neighborhood?
It's Harvard, Illinois. So it's on the outskirts of Chicago.
Okay.
So I would wake up early. I was homeschooled too. So I'd wake up early. I would get my schoolwork done. And then I would be driven out to the farm to go do the chores, to ride, to just, I shadowed my grandmother doing everything. So I started with her and then I just kept with it. And I had a lot of intense dressage training throughout my whole life.
Intense.
Very intense.
How would you describe dressage?
Dressage is...
Someone who's not familiar.
Okay, so to simplify it, it was used for war.
It was for war?
Mm-hmm. That's really how they train the horses.
To
maneuver around soldiers, yeah.
Like, so, like, in actual medieval times?
Yeah, in wars.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't realize that. Okay, so now if you were to simplify
it. So if I were to simplify it, I would say dressage is like ballerina.
Horse ballerina.
Horse ballerina.
Okay.
That's the easiest way to simplify
it. I'm kind of imagining like a BoJack Horseman character now, like the actual horse ballerina.
Yeah. So
just with the tulle on and all that. Yeah.
So you see those cartoon horses that are like prancing around.
Yeah.
That's what we really do.
Like, yeah. They do dressage in the Olympics, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Was that something you ever thought about?
Oh, yeah. I think about it every day.
You still
That's
think about
my
it.
Ultimate number one to the sky goal.
Still?
Yes, still. Still to this day.
So is that something like you kind of work on the side while you're also...
Yeah, you can. It's a very long-term goal. Normally, the Olympians, they're like 60 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they have a long, long career of competing and training. You have to find the perfect horse. It involves a lot of money as well, just like any other...
Yeah.
You know, Olympian.
So it, that's so people who do that in the Olympics, it's like a lifetime
right.
that they put into it.
Yeah, just it's not, you can't go in it at 16 years old like a gymnast. It's a very, very long, like not, you know, being mean to gymnasts, but it's a very long, long process.
Interesting. So mm-hmm. you had this very intensive training when you were younger.
Yes.
And then somehow you got involved in medieval times.
Yes, I did. So it's actually a circle of life because my grandmother, we lived about an hour from the medieval times in Chicago, and she got in contact with one of the horse trainers there, and he would come out and train our horses. And then we would also take her Frisian stallions to their show. They had like a Christmas show where they pull the carriage, and my grandmother was she trained horses how to drive the carriages and all that. So they used her horses in the show. So I would go with her and shadow her, and I was in the stables at like 8 years old watching.
Yeah.
Watching all of this happen, I was like, this is so cool. So we knew a few people, and I learned a lot from them as well. But then we got disconnected from medieval times. They no longer needed her horses or anything. And then years and years later, it had to have been like 15 years later, I ran into somebody who worked for the head trainer in Chicago, and she got me connected with him. So I started working for him outside of the company, and then he got me in the company again. So I started
kind of
working
came back full circle,
right,
yeah.
So it literally went in a full circle, and I started working for him. And I was very overqualified for a stable hand. I had a lot of training, so I started from the bottom again.
Oh wow!
At medieval times,
because you really wanted to do the job,
or? Right? Because I really wanted it.
And it was worth it.
Yeah, totally, totally. And now I'm here. Now I'm a head trainer in you know Jersey. It's really cool.
Yeah.
So he got me started with that, and I worked there for about a year and a half. Then I was promoted to assistant, and now I'm head trainer.
When do you start your day?
So if we have a show at night, a 7 o'clock show, I'll come in at 2 or 3.
P.M.
P.M., yes.
Okay.
I'll work the young horses, the very young horses that are not in the show yet.
What do you mean by work them?
I'll start training them. So whatever it takes, maybe half hour to 45 minutes to an hour. And I have about 2 or 3 of them.
So what does that entail? Like, what do you actually, what does that mean?
Okay, so
paint
for a baby.
For
sure. For an example, now we just got a new baby in probably a week and a half ago. And he doesn't know anything. Like, he didn't even know how to have a halter on.
What's a halter?
A halter, it goes over their face so you can lead them. He didn't know how to be led by a human. He didn't know how to pick up his feet so we can clean out his hooves. Didn't know how to be brushed. Didn't know how to be washed.
A horse has to learn how to be brushed?
Right.
Interesting.
It's more desensitizing rather than learning.
Okay. He has to get used to it.
Right. So we teach him obedience, we teach him walking, we teach him how to go in a circle around you, and that's his process. That's the process right now. So right now, it's all about obedience.
Yeah.
And he's doing great. Okay. So it took about 2 weeks to help him understand, like...
What's his name?
Oro.
Oro? Mm-hmm. Oro the horse?
Oro MT.
Oro MT.
And Oro MT, yeah. We all, it's, the MT is obviously medieval times.
Oro MT.
It's gold in Spanish, so he's our little golden boy right now.
There's like a Spanish theme through the whole show. Like there's like everything's
sort of Spanish castle.
Valencia, and yeah. There's, in Seville, there's a whole thing about Spanish oranges at one point.
The owners of the castle are Spanish.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
And the first one, I believe, was in Spain.
I didn't know that.
Huh. It's really
okay,
cool.
Okay, so you train Oro. You're working with the young horses first.
Yes.
That's where you start.
Yeah, so I'll have 2 or 3 of those, like take a few hours.
Are the young horses, those are the hard ones, right?
Like, oh,
you have
to
break them in?
Yeah. Okay. Very hard. Well, not hard, just very time consuming, and you have to have complete patience. Like, complete patience.
Why? How so?
Because they're young. They have a young mind, and they want to play. They're scared. They don't know your body language. They don't know personal space. I just had an incident a week ago. There was a loud noise in the arena where we train them, and he spooked behind me and struck out with his front leg.
Ooh.
And kicked me in the side.
Oh.
Yeah, so I have a bruise about the size of a grapefruit on my hip right now.
How?
It was really stupid, but that's the thing. You have to teach them personal space because they'll jump right on you.
They'll just kick you. Boot you.
Yeah, they don't care. They don't not care.
How?
They will run you down.
How often does that happen?
Not very often. I mean, you have to be aware.
Once is enough for me.
Yeah, yeah. And you'd think I would know too because I'm the trainer.
You've been doing this for years.
Right, but it happens. Like I wasn't, you know, I was looking forward, walking him, and all of a sudden a noise to the right of us went off and he got scared.
Yeah.
He went forward and he struck out at me and that was it. And it happened so fast you don't even think about it.
I imagine you've gotten thrown off of horses.
Yes.
How injured have you ever been?
So this wasn't within the company, but I was bucked off pretty hard one time. The horse was bucking so hard that I got the wind knocked out of me on the horse.
Ooh.
He was going at it. He was the bunking bronco. It was like PBR. And I was like, no, I was just kidding. I was not raising my hand. Yeah, it was not fun for me.
For people listening at home, there was a little bit of cowboy lassoing, like motion going there. Cowgirl.
The one hand.
Yeah, hand in the air, waving around that rope. No, okay. So he was bucking that, and you actually got the wind knocked out of you on the animal.
Yeah, and it lasted about 4 seconds, and I was on the ground, and I fractured my tailbone.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was a big fall.
Wow. I hope they have good insurance for you.
Oh, yeah, we do. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. But this wasn't within the company. This was at my grandmother's. I know. It was crazy. Oof. It was so scary.
Rough.
I was on the ground like, oh, what's happening? So and the horse is just staring at me at the ground. Like, what'd you do?
What did you do?
Yeah, what did you do?
And the young ones will just run off, you said, or they're, if you're not careful. So
right.
you're breaking them in.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's like the beginning of your day.
Yes. Okay. A normal day.
So what comes after that?
After, you know, I complete the babies, usually the knights will come in.
Okay.
And I will work with them on the horses. You know, one or two, usually they have a fight practice.
Yeah.
If we don't have a full rehearsal or practice, I'll take one or two. They'll help me work exercise horses that aren't in the show or are injured. They can do light work, or I'm teaching individual knights to do certain parts of my part of the show.
Yeah.
And
the dancing, the dressage.
Right.
The knights assist with that.
Yes, of course.
How do they assist exactly?
The entertainment part where the horse was like, we call it long lines, where we are driving them from the ground, making them do all these tricks, like the Spanish walk, the trot in place. The prancing.
You come out and you look like you're accompanying the horse.
Yes.
You're there and it comes out. I mean, they do these tricks where they jump into the air,
right,
kick back.
Yeah.
And
that's called airs above the ground, but we call it long lining.
Long lining. Okay.
Right. So that's one of the entertainment parts. Another part that I control is the 8-man parade.
Okay.
I'm sure you saw that as well. There's literally 8 horses, 8 people, 8 knights.
Yeah.
And they have the flags and the armor and their... where it's like choreographed routine. So we train the younger knights to do that, as well as the senior knights do it, but it should be completed already. And then we train them to do the long lines.
So you're training horses to do these tricks, but at the same time, you're also training knights to guide the horses to do these tricks during the show.
Yes.
So you got to train the humans as well.
Right.
Which is harder.
Yeah. So the humans, for sure, because they talk back to me and that's not that fun. So... but no, it's
you're the head horse trainer. What do you mean they're talking? How are they talking back to you?
They don't like me very much.
Why not?
No, I'm just kidding. They love me. They love me. We have so much fun together.
Yeah.
But the people are definitely a lot harder.
Also, because that's a new skill for them,
right? Like, and they also have their own opinion too. The horses, they're understanding. You know, they want to work for you.
So, what kind of talk back do you get from a knight?
Sometimes they don't have the feeling. And it's very hard to teach feeling for the horse.
Okay, just like the intuitive sense of what the horse is doing? Okay.
So it's hard to teach them, you know, in that aspect. They don't really talk back. I mean...
Yeah. But okay,
just teasing them.
So sometimes their job is to work with a horse and they're just not a natural horse person.
Right, exactly. So you have to work with them longer. You have to have patience. You definitely have to be a little bit more in depth with them. And you know, we do have those and that's okay. We just keep them on a little bit easier horses, or we don't teach them certain things like higher level aspects of the show.
Does that, if a knight can't learn to do this kind of stuff, does that actually limit their ability to move up in medieval times?
Yes, it can.
It's in their interest to learn from you as well.
Yeah. So when we get a knight that's talented and has that interest and wants to do it, that's a huge deal to us, because a lot of the knights, they just want to get in. They want to learn. They want to get in and they want to fight. And they don't want to learn about the horses. So when we actually get knights that want to do that, that goes to my heart. Yeah. It's really, really beautiful.
Is that a divide on staff between like the real horse people and the not so much horse people?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be difficult. But, you know, it's still a part of their job. It's still part of their job title that they have to do this.
Is there anyone who doesn't like horses who works there?
I'm trying to think. You know what? I don't think they've... Maybe they're scared to tell me that because I'm the horse trainer. But I don't think anyone has told me that or I've seen it.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
I want to get back to actually training the horses.
Sure.
There were two tricks that actually stood out to me. One was, what was when they jump up and kick the hooves out, what's that called?
So that's the Capriole.
Capriole?
Yeah.
It's impressive.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
this big animal just like gets up and it looks almost warlike.
Yeah.
They're taking out.
They use that in the war too.
Oh, they do? Okay.
Yeah, they attack them from behind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So how do you train a like 800, I have no idea how many pounds they weigh, like one ton.
We say about 1,200. They're all about averaged about 1,200.
How do you train a four-legged 1,200 pound animal to jump into the air and kick its hooves back? Like, what is the process for training it to do that?
Okay, so this is a very, very tedious question. So I'm going to explain this as much as I can. So,
all right, let's hear.
Sorry. It's a very long process. But first, if you want to train a horse to Capriole, you have to look at the horse. Overall, he has to have the personality. He has to have the body shape. He has to have the athletic ability. So that's the number one step. And then you train him. You literally start the train process as the babies.
Yeah.
So you teach him obedience. Then you start teaching him how to be ridden. And once that's completed and he's in the show as doing the easy parts, like the 8-man carousel is super easy. So he can do that. And then you start looking at him for Capriole. So then you take him. I'm sorry. It's such a long process.
Let me get his sense. Like I'm watching the wheels turn in your head.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, so then we go here. Then we go here. Then we go here.
Take me through as best you can.
Okay. So you have to have, again, patience to do this
because
they don't understand. So to train the Capriole, you have to first teach them how to stand on the back legs and then you add in the kick. So then once the horse understands both of those, you can start putting the puzzle together into a full Capriole.
Interesting. So how do you get a horse to stand up on its hind legs?
It depends on the horse, but there's multiple ways you can do it. So we have these, we call them pillars.
Okay.
And we put the horse in between the pillars and we train him to listen to commands of our voice and of our cue stick. So for the rear, we start touching him in places where he's going to react. And when he reacts the way we want him to, even if it's the slightest movement, we reward him. And then we start asking again. And if he gets it with those slightest movements, we start asking for a little bit more of the same cue, but more dramatic.
Basically, you've got the stick and you're kind of whacking the horse's butt, it sounds like, or like his
legs.
No,
we don't whack him, but it's a
tapping.
Right. So it's like the tap of a finger.
Okay.
And we see how he reacts.
Interesting.
So how I would do it is I would tap his neck, the back of his neck, and see if he feels it.
Okay.
If he like doesn't do anything, I'm like, okay, so I'll do it again. And he picks up his head a little. I was like, okay, this is a real example of a horse I'm training right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I tap him on the neck. It's like a tap of the finger. And they react to it because they can feel, feel a fly in their back. So he picks up his head. I'm like, okay, that's good. So I stop, I wait, and I do it again. And he picks up his head. It's like, okay. So he's starting to lift up his front body, which is what I want, right?
Yeah.
So then I ask more. And he's like, he gets a little bit more excited because he knows he's being good. And then I give sugar. I also reward them with sugar. So if they start getting more excited, so I now at this point, I only have to approach him with the cue stick. And he's getting more excited. And he's like, oh, yeah, okay. And then it goes from there.
Interesting. So it's like you're finding the horse's cue.
Right.
And then you're repeating it.
Right.
So it's like exploring what works for the horse.
Right.
You're not picking something and then somehow telling it. It's like, okay, you're kind of taking advantage of its natural impulse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. And so then you just keep building that over.
Exactly.
Until finally. And that's how, is that sort of the basics of any horse trick training? Like it's that fundamental exploration.
Yeah, itself. It's really about finding their buttons and being repetitive about it.
Yeah.
Because you have to have the same button for what you want every single time. So, but every horse is different too. So that button doesn't work. You got to try another one.
How do you keep track of all the different horses' buttons? Do you just like kind of, for different tricks?
For 99% of the time, they all have the same button.
Okay.
So it's very laid out. But they can be different.
Yeah.
The number one thing, though, is you have to have patience because they can't talk to you. They don't, we don't know what they're saying. We have to learn how to read them as well. Some horses can get really mad. Some horses don't react at all.
When you talk about a horse person, that's it. It's someone who knows how to read these animals' reactions.
Right. Kind of. You have to, being a horse trainer, that's the number one thing you need to have is learning to read their behavior because they can be very dangerous.
How long did it take you to I guess you were just doing it through your whole life. So it must just have been intuitive sort of for you to start, right?
It's about experience as well. But I'm going to be honest, I'm still learning. No matter what kind of horse trainer or how experienced you are, you're always going to be learning for the rest of your life.
So you're working on one of these advanced tricks, like the Capriole, for a horse to learn that?
Depending on the horse, it can take up to maybe 2 months to maybe 6 months.
Really?
Yeah. It can be very quick. If you're very patient with the horse and very clear, it can be a very quick for that trick.
Yeah.
Not from baby to that trick.
No. But once they're already in that process, that's quick. Two months to six. I'm like, that's okay. It's like half a year potentially. That's,
yeah.
That's a lot for one movement. But then once you've trained them to do it.
Oh, then it's easy.
They never forget, do they?
They don't forget, but they can be very, they can be stubborn.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't want to do it.
What do you do with a stubborn horse?
You have to go back and pretty much retrain them.
Interesting.
To make sure they're listening to your commands.
Does that ever happen during the show? Like, they're supposed to do the trick and they're just like, nope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It happens. But that's also why we have full rehearsals, too.
Beforehand?
Yeah.
To, like, take the temperature? Are they going to cooperate?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you do if a horse is just being a son of a bitch?
Well, during the show, you can't really do anything about it. You just have you just move on to the next part and that's it.
Yeah.
But, we practice enough to where that rarely happens.
Okay. And you do have that. You have that rehearsal.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. They're very well behaved, though. The horses are they're great.
So you work with the knights and the older horses, the stallions.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where do you go next?
So I work with the babies. I work with the knights and the high school stuff. And then usually if it's a show, I'll get ready for the show. I'll take 30 minutes, to freshen up my makeup, my hair, because I also do perform in the show.
Yeah.
And then I also go back to make sure I'm mostly in charge of stable hands. So I have about 6 stable hands, and I'm making sure the horses are properly dressed and washed and cleaned and everything is set up for the show. And then we wait for showtime.
In the show, you're sort of, again, you're coming out, you're guiding them. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your role.
Our first part is the long lines part. So yeah. I will usually perform the harder ones, like you said, the Capriole and a couple of the other ones. And then I'll also make sure, I'll monitor everybody to make sure they're doing it right. They're cueing the horse right. The horse is behaving, the horse is healthy, the horse is happy. So that's the long line part. And then we'll go back and we'll do a change, a clothes change. We'll get our armor on, our helmets, and then we'll go back and get our horses that were assigned to us for the 8-man parade. And then we get on and we line up in our tunnel and we wait for the cue and then we do our 8-man routine. And then I'll go back and this is when I do my solo routines. So I'll do the Liberty. So yeah. I have to take my armor and my helmet and my cape off for that. And I'll go out and I'll do the Liberty. And then I come back and then I do a full change, full dress change. So that's my, we call it the Master of Horse.
Yeah.
So that's when I go out and I do all the dressage, the Alta Escuela, which is high school, like the Spanish walk, the rear, the Piaf, the Passage, all the fancy stuff.
All the fancy stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff that you would see at the Olympics.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, and you're kind of practicing and doing all of that.
Yeah, I get to do it every day and practice every single day. I need a lot of work still, but I'm still, it's so fun.
I mean, during the show, these horses are, they're charging at each other. People have swords. Mm-hmm. They're swinging at each other. I mean, they are jousting.
Right.
I mean, are they scared? Do they get scared?
So if they're a little bit younger and less experienced in the show, sometimes they can get afraid. Or if something changes or weird happens, they'll get a little bit spooked. But most of the time they don't. Most of the time they're pretty solid in the show.
Do you have to train them to run at each other and joust?
Oh,
jousting?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
How do you do that? How do you get them
to? So the jousting, actually the knights do most of the jousting training.
Okay.
So the horse has to be completely solid for riding. He has to walk, trot, canter on a straight line, circles, anything. And pretty much you set up the rail for practice and you can run the horse straight up and down, up and down, up and down. And you can put another horse on the other side straight up and down. If he's solid with those rails and that horse coming at him, you can add the shield. And then you add the shield and then you go. And then the fun part comes when the joust hits the shield and the thing explodes in his face.
Yeah.
And he's like, what the hell just happened? Yeah. That's when it gets interesting.
Yeah.
But that's more also repetitive. You have to desensitize him to that explosion. Yeah.
Over and over.
Over and over and over and over. And as well as the light change in the arena during the show. So the lights change, the music changes. It gets so much louder during the actual show than just practice. So that's when we have those full rehearsals of sound and lighting and everything comes in. So more repetitive than anything.
Just you do it over and over again until the horse is just totally
right.
numb to it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's all like charging at another human, at another horse and a madman, a lance is just a day at the office.
Yeah. We're pretty much letting him know that he's going to be okay. That they're all going to be okay. This is normal for you now.
Yeah, normal for you now.
Yes.
Sorry. Welcome to the army, kid.
Pretty much.
When I first met you, you were right before the show, you were in the stable and you were like at a million things going on.
Uh-huh.
And you said to me, like, part of this job is kind of gross. Like, it just like there's like a lot of gross stuff that comes up when you're taking care of horses. So, like, but you didn't, like, what were you talking about? Like, what kind of stuff comes up?
So, for example, the horses, so we fully have to care for the horses. They're like helpless children.
Yeah.
So we have to feed them, we have to bathe them, we have to do everything. And they get sick.
Yeah.
So, in their stalls, sometimes they make a mess in the wall. Like, if you want me to be vulgar, they go diarrhea on the wall.
Ooh.
We have to put gloves on and scrub it off the wall.
Okay.
Another thing is they like to go to the bathroom in their water buckets. We have like automatic waters, and they don't know. They're just horses. They're just going wherever they want, and we have to clean it out of the water, clean the water bowl down, and refill it.
They use it as a urinal.
Yeah, pretty much. That's with their manure.
Oh, with their manure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Because it's mounted on the wall.
Oh,
and,
yeah. So you know, they just back up.
Right. And ooh, they don't know. And they're like, oh. Yeah. And then it's like in there.
Yeah.
And so we have to clean it out.
Because that's what they're supposed to be drinking from.
Right.
Great.
Yeah. So we have to check those dailies, and it can get really gross.
Yeah.
So gross. We also have to care for their wounds if they're bleeding, like if they get a nick on their legs.
Does that happen often? Or
yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes if they roll around in the stall and they hit their head on something, they'll get like a little nick.
Yeah.
We have to clean it, put gloves on, clean it, and then put ointment on it. We work with stallions. So their genital cavity goes up into them.
Okay.
And when they pee or get excited, their genital cavity drops, right? And they're dirty.
Oh.
So it's dirty.
Yeah.
And you have to clean it off. You literally are like peeling the dead skin off.
Yeah.
And they have to be clean. So
it's like you're cleaning a horse foreskin.
Right.
That's
right.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So that's the dirty part of the job.
That's okay.
Like, not a lot of people do it. They frown upon it.
Yeah.
The knights and, you know, the squires. But as a stable hand and a horse trainer, you have to do it.
Wait, but okay, the squires, do you ever like give that assignment? Like, it's time.
No, I won't give it to them.
That's
they should
brutal.
Love me for that. You know, I should. I actually should be a punishment for them.
I was about to say the horse foreskin is... Talk about in the army now.
Yes, it's brutal. It's so brutal.
Welcome to medieval times.
No, I don't make them
it's
do
that
it.
Of the stocks.
Like, yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay, so there is, I mean, you're dealing with animals, though.
Yes.
It's like a zoo or anywhere else. Like,
right.
That's reality.
And they can't do it themselves. They're helpless, so we have to do it for them.
But, like, what is the majority of horse care? Like, what is most of it that you're having to do?
Just to make sure they're healthy, they're fed.
Yeah.
They're fed three times a day. Their stalls are cleaned about six times a day
because
they're in there often. Their hygiene is, you know, they're clean.
Yeah.
Their stalls are clean. The area is clean.
You have to wash a horse. Oh, I just whacked my mic. Is it just like a bucket and soap? Like, what?
So
are you hosing them down?
Like, yep. So you bring them into the wash stall. You detangle their mane and tail, make sure it's all the shavings are out. You brush their body, make sure sawdust is not on there. Then you rinse them down, and then you soap them up and rinse them off.
Are you and your team doing this for like every horse every day?
Mm-hmm. For the show, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a team of stable hands that come in 3 or 4 hours before the show, and they wash almost every single horse for the show.
It's like they're getting their hair and makeup done.
Yeah, exactly. It's a spa for them every single day.
I mean, lucky horse.
Yeah. they're spoiled rotten.
They're getting a blowout.
Yep. Every day.
So that's the rhythm. It's like, you got to make sure they're clean, make sure they're ready.
Right.
Make sure they're happy and healthy.
Yes.
Yeah. What's like the worst thing you can discover in a stable? Like a sick horse?
A sick horse for sure.
Yeah.
And it does happen. That's, you know, it can be a natural cause or something can happen. But a sick horse, you know, you have to learn how to read their behavior again. So if you see a horse that is acting erratically, you have to act upon it because probably something's wrong.
What kind of thing will a horse do?
So
you know it's sick.
If he's sick, we call it colic. It's when they have an abdominal obstruction inside them.
Yeah.
And it can cause a lot of pain. Usually they're kicking at their stomach violently or biting or thrashing themselves up against the wall or rolling around in a stall, up and down, up and down. They get up and they go down again. That's not normal behavior, and usually that's a sign of a horse is sick. Or a horse is just, you can tell, if you're around the horses enough, you can learn their behavior. You know, some are spirited, some are not. You'll see a horse that looks a little down,
yeah.
Or he won't eat his food, or he's not going to the bathroom. Usually he'll be under the weather a little bit, so we have to keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
He'll have a temperature or, you know, something. Something's up. Yeah. So
but they can't talk to you. So you gotta,
right. Yeah. So you have to learn how to read them.
What would you say is the most challenging aspect of your job?
I would definitely say working with the people.
Working with the people. Yeah. The horses are easy.
Because I've been doing it my whole life. I can read a horse instantly. I can, you know, train a horse. I can work with a horse. I can work with crazy horses, anything. But I would say managing people.
Yeah. The stable hands.
Yes. The stable hands, the squires, the knights.
What comes up with a stable hand?
The job of a stable hand is pretty much literally caring for the horse.
Yeah.
That's it. So they come in, like, let's say a morning shift they are scheduled for. They come in very early, like between 6:30 and 7.
Yeah.
And the first thing they do is feed them. They administer medicine, and then they have to strip the entire stall. So get all of the nasty manure, pee,
yeah,
bad shavings out.
They got to do all that.
Yeah. Right. And then they lay down new bedding.
How does a stable hand script their job? I guess, like, what does he have to worry? Is like coordinating them? That is that they don't show up? Like,
oh,
like,
yeah.
What kind of, as managing a stable hand, like, what kind of headache will come up?
So what would give me a headache is because we get people, especially in our area, we don't have people that are horse people, I would say.
Yeah.
So
suburban New Jersey's not.
Right. Because it's in a weird area, right?
This is not Montana.
Yeah, exactly. So we get people that know that's never seen a horse in person. And we do hire people like that. And that's okay. We train them. But my battle is making sure people are fully attentive to the care of the horses. And that's a huge deal to me. I always, like, I will get very defensive if somebody is careless with a horse.
How can someone be careless? Like, what can they do?
They don't brush him when they put him away.
Okay.
Or they left him tied up for too long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't keep a horse tied up for too long. That can cause a sickness. But mainly being careless to the horse and knowing they're careless.
So, and because you're dealing with a lot of beginners.
Right.
People who, like you said, they're not horse people.
Or people that have been there for a while and they just don't care.
Interesting.
Or like non-horse people.
Non-horse people.
<That's> Going back to that.
Yeah. So these horses join medieval times when they're children.
Mm-hmm.
They're kids.
Yep.
It's the only home they know.
Right.
How long are they in the show for?
So we get them. We have a breeding ranch in Texas, Sanger, Texas, called Chapel Creek Ranch. They do all the breeding there.
The company breeds all its own horses.
Yes, we have our own. It's medieval times strictly.
Is there like a particular kind of horse that you guys are breeding?
Yeah, the Spanish horse. So
okay.
Andalusians. So we get the horses at 3 years old. They're born and raised on the ranch, and they spend 3 years of their life there, and then they are shipped to each castle. And then we begin their training. A healthy age for an Andalusian to start being worked and trained is 3. You don't want to go any younger because they're not fully developed. So we start them at 3. They'll live their life at that castle until they're about 15 to 18 years old, depending on their health. So if we have a horse that's 15 and he's got arthritis or, you know, he's worn out, we'll retire him. We'll either send him back to the ranch or we'll find a really good home for him.
So they're doing 12 to 15 years of service.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they get to go chill out on a farm.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Not the glue factory farm.
No, not the glue factory. No way.
have you ever had to put down a horse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've had to do that.
I saw that happen once at a race. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's very heartbreaking. Yeah. I hate watching it, but, you know, it happens.
What's the kind of thing that'll happen that you have to...
So our number one cause of putting a horse down is colic, like I explained earlier.
Yeah.
Abdominal obstruction. Anything can cause a colic. So that's why I always say my number one job is making sure the horses are well taken care of, making sure they're healthy. Our stable hands know exactly what to do. They can read them. They can understand the symptoms.
Because I mean, aside from being a living, breathing, you know, creature and wonderful creatures, they're important assets.
Right.
The company's literally breeding and investing in them.
So oh, yeah.
Your job is actually like tending to one of the most valuable things, some of the property. Like,
right. You know? Exactly. Yeah. It's very important. Very important.
Do you have a favorite horse?
I'm not supposed to say I have a favorite horse because I love them all equally, but I have a really...
I don't think they're listening. I mean, they might
Other
be.
Other people are listening.
That would be...
No,
that
I have...
That would be kind of amazing. Just like I know. One angle, like a bunch of them are just around.
I show
like,
up and they all attack me at one time.
Like an iPhone sitting in the middle of the stable. they're all craning their necks. Who is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, wait, no, who's your favorite horse?
I would say Kosovo.
Kosovo.
So, Kosovo is... I moved here about... Oh my gosh, 2015. And when I showed up, this horse showed up at the same time I did. He was 3 years old. And that was kind of when I was here helping out. That was kind of, I was, you know, kind of assigned to him, helping out, stardom, the obedience, the basic level of training. And I formed a bond with him. And actually, this horse was terrified of people. You couldn't even go into a stall. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes, you know, horses don't know and they're terrified and they act differently than other horses. So I kind of had to baby him. So I was like, all right, now my patience level is, you really have to be patient. So I spent a little time with him and I gave him a lot of sugar, made sure he, you know, could trust me. And then finally, you know, he started trusting other people.
Okay, he learned to like humans.
Right, yeah.
He's like, all right, this is
yeah,
okay.
To reassure him that, you know, it's okay. And then I traveled back and forth between Chicago and New Jersey. And when I went back again 2 weeks later, I got to work with him again. And he remembered me. You know, you can tell when they remember you and you're like, oh, that's like my mother.
Aww.
And then I finally moved out there and I trained him from scratch to now he does the solo routine in the show. And he did the Liberty part.
Yeah.
I think you remember the Liberty part.
I forget. What's the Liberty part again?
The Liberty part is the Freedom Act, where the horse is running free. Then he does a little rear and then a bow, and then he walks out with you.
Is that kind of the hardest one for
horses? I was just going to say that it's not the hardest, but you have to have a very strong bond with the horse. He has to trust you. It's the most beautiful part of the show, but I hate performing that part.
Why do you need such a like strong bond with the animal for that?
Because he has to trust you that... You have to pretty much trust him that he's going to listen to you 100% and he's going to stay focused on you because they're free.
Yeah.
They're a free animal.
They could go anywhere.
They can literally do whatever they want. And there's times where they just leave the arena.
Wait, they just...
Literally, peace. In the middle of the show and he's out the curtain.
What's the move then?
They usually catch him in the back and send him back out.
Get the fuck out there.
Get back here. And then you're like gritting your teeth during the rest of the routine, like, oh my god. But no, it's 99% of the time he's there listening and focusing on you because he trusts you.
What do you do if he runs off out of the arena? Like, how do you tell him bad horse? Like, you can't punish him, or what do you do?
No, you don't. You know, you just have to pretty much practice more, make sure, you know, he's more focused. It happens though.
So that's your favorite moment of the show though, when you're sitting there in the center and the horse is running free mm-hmm. around you.
So I wouldn't say it's my favorite. It's my least favorite to perform.
Yeah, most beautiful in the...
But most beautiful act.
Yeah.
Because if you actually... Every cue has to be spot on with the music. And if it's put together right, it's a very intimate moment. It's really cool. So Kosovo, back to Kosovo, he's my favorite. So I trained him from scratch to nothing. And now he's my little devil child.
This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, very it really has.
Poor stable hands.
I know. They all work so hard, though. I love them all.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, please, if you did like the show, leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. And if you got questions, comments, thoughts, please send me an email at working@slate.com. Again, that is working@slate.com. Working is produced by Jessamyn Molly. A special thank you to Justin D. Wright for the ad music. And I just want to add a personal note. A few of my colleagues gave me a little bit of guff. Did some ball busting because I told my wife I loved her at the end of the last episode. I got made fun of a little bit for being mushy. You know what? I'm mushy. That's what I am. And I love my wife. So I'm just going to say it again. You can make fun all you want. Anyway, guys, I hope you join us next time for more Medieval Times.